Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham. I've been around the world and I'm talking to you, the Association of OldFootballShirts.com. Yes, that's right. With no real meaningful football to talk about, we've put out the bat signal, or in this case, the seagull signal, and we're delighted with the response. The club now has a truly global footprint, and it's great that we've moved on from the days of scars and stripes, and we're now talking about stars and stripes. So, please welcome, from the stateside seagulls, Paul Dorsey, Tyler Scott and Kieran Baker. And also, Alan Wares is here as well, but he's in Worthing.
Sorry about that. Sorry.
Not quite as glamorous for you, though, is it, Al? But, you know.
I'm a star in my own rumour, that's all. Gentlemen, welcome to the Albion Roar. Kieran, Tyler, Paul, where should we start? I think we want to... Let's start with the returning fellow, Paul Dorsey. You've been on the show before, yeah. But... For our listener who can't remember, just let's start with you. Give us your backstory. Where you're from, what do you do, and what on earth are you doing on here?
Yeah, so thank you guys again for having me. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland, which is just about an hour north of Washington, D.C. I became an Albion fan in 2012, 2013, really started to follow the Albion in, I hate to say it, the playoff semifinal against Palace. Didn't know why it was important other than it was the playoffs, but decided, you know what, I'm going to hitch my wagon to this. And it's been thankfully uphill from there, but that was definitely a wonderful baptism of fire. But it's been fantastic. So I don't know how I started following Brighton at the beginning, but I started following the results throughout the course of that season. Couldn't watch it, couldn't really listen. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to actually try to figure out a way to listen to the match because I know this is important. I followed some people on Twitter at that point and I listened to the match, saw the reaction on Twitter, and I was like, all right, I'm feeling something here and it's negative because we're losing and I don't know why, but I'm going to follow that feeling.
Actually, I mean, that's a very, very good point you make there. And actually going to bring in Kieran here. Now, Kieran, you're the expat amongst the stateside seagulls here. And obviously, the point that Paul was just making, that you couldn't really watch it because obviously with the Premier League, every game is on telly. You can watch it everywhere in the world, apart from the UK mostly. But I mean, with the Championship, you have the iFollow stuff now, that's a relative newcomer. So how are you following the Albion in the times when we were in the lower reaches?
Thanks very much, mate, for having us on. And I used to listen to be honest, the radio a little bit, and also text watching the Andy Naylor do something through the Argus. Mm. So it was a little hard at times to keep up, but I used to also catch a couple of games. The Championship was shown on ESPN, so Brighton would be on every so often.
Sure.
When they were in the Championship. But it's been an incredible journey just seeing, pinching myself, thinking about the days when I would drive to Gillingham to watch, the days that with Dean, you know, just now it's, well, Europe and the Gold Star, yeah. Memories are still alive.
Actually, Al, I didn't tell you this. I was driving back from Holland with our friends from the Dutch Seagulls the other day, yeah. And we got off the Eurostar
Eurotunnel.
Yeah, and Eurotunnel in Folkestone, and Werner saw a sign to Gillingham, and he said, "Oh, let's go to Gillingham," and I said, "Let's not."
Is he Welsh?
Those weren't the exact words I used.
No,
but
I get the point. But now, Kieran, obviously, AD's just mentioned up top there that you're the expat amongst us, and you've been to hell holes and back again. So, give us your backstory.
Basically got employed to start out at CNN and then came over here to Atlanta and then moved up to Washington to start with another job, Al Jazeera English. So my background is journalism, TV production. And I've always, I don't know, just always been so passionate about Albion. Just one of those, because they were the underdogs. You know, you never kind of quite sure. You went years in misery and then suddenly you know, realizing the dream of the Premier League, first of all, and then the idea that they could get into Europe, and it's crazy. And then the idea that they even came over here to play, that's the thing that really blew my mind away. The fact that they were actually here this summer and seeing so many sort of Brighton fans, which I'd never expected. So it's been a real love journey, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, Tyler, let's go with you. I mean, your story, I mean, tell me, how did it all start for you?
Yeah, so I appreciate you having me on. I started playing soccer as a kid. Sorry, football. I'll say football for you guys.
Please do.
But so I played football as a kid, and when my dad took a trip over to the UK, and he actually bought me a, I'll say it here, and I apologize if you need to bleep it out, but Manchester United jersey. And brought it back.
Thanks for coming on, Tyler. Yeah. It's been great having you.
But it was in the time that was mentioned, you know, like watching, there was no watching football over here. It was all just text updates. And so I kind of just fell out of watching it. And Atlanta United popped up in 2017 here in Atlanta. I became a season ticket holder there. And, you know, just thought, you know, I want to start following Premier League again, and did not want to follow anybody that all my friends followed, and wanted to find a team that I kind of felt like I identified with. And I'd been to Brighton before, done some events and shows in Brighton, loved the town. I have a book that I love called Brighton Rock, you know, so I was kind of just drawn to it. And so Chris Hughton, 2017, first year of Premier League, was kind of when I started, and I've been following ever since. So
Kieran was saying just there that the ESPN do show the Championship. I don't know if that means just the top end or sort of occasional things like Rotherham against I don't know, Women's Institute or whoever's in the Championship these days. It seems so long ago, but you're saying, you know, it's from 2017 onwards. But was your fire lit? I mean, Paul was saying since 2012. Was your fire lit before that? I mean, or was there a tipping point you thought, I've got to go with this? I'm feeling this.
It was probably around that time, I guess. 2017 felt like that. I think, I mean, there's something about the club that just, it presents a very, like, it just presents an experience, or a vibe. I'll say a vibe of just like doing things the right way, which I really appreciate. And so when I, even though it wasn't, you know, the glamorous football that we're watching these days, I mean, just being able to watch a team that seemed to play like a team was really, really special. And that's really how I locked onto it.
Go on.
I was going to say, Kieran, I mean, let's take that sort of leap forward to the here and the now. And obviously we'll talk about, you know, more respective journeys, and we'll dig into them a bit closer. But if you remember, sort of 10 days ago or so, a couple of weeks ago, the Albion published some business information that's as to, and this is the point I'm picking up from Tyler here, is, you know, what it means to the community and the city and what have you, is that it's worth an estimated £612 million to the UK economy. I mean, I don't suppose you were actually thinking of, the Brighton economy. Yeah, to the Brighton economy. I don't suppose you were actually thinking about what the local economy sort of thing was when you were schlepping all the way up and down to Gillingham, but these are eye-watering figures that the Albion can produce, aren't they?
Yeah, no, it's incredible. And then just seeing that they're one of the first clubs in Europe or whatever to have a women's team stadium proposed, I think that's also amazing. Mm-hmm. I think it goes to the heart of Bloom's incredible vision, but I think you know, doing the right thing is something that has genuinely been passed through the actual members of the Albion teams that have come back and trained and ended up coaching and being part of the fabric. That seems to me to be the thing that really goes through the vein of the club, as it were. So I just I'm in awe of that management / ownership of Bloom and what he's done. It's just been one of the most amazing stories.
And as someone who's got a kind of, I suppose, a foot in either on both sides of the pond here, you've probably got a better insight than the rest of us here. Does that particular part of it really translate, or is it something that has to be sold and told to the American audience?
No, I think this summer, Paul was telling me, because I didn't get to go to meet up with Stateside Seagull. I only just joined a few months ago. But the summer, I got to visit Philadelphia and Atlanta to watch Brighton. And Paul was telling me how Bloom and a lot of the members of the Brighton board even were just hanging out with fans and just genuinely trying to explain the story and just were so, you know, humble and easy to approach. And I'm sure, you know, I didn't have a chance to meet any of them or see them, but Paul, probably you saw, I think, Tony a few times. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like Kieran said, and I'm sure Tyler was in Atlanta, he can attest to this as well. When we had our events in Philadelphia, Atlanta, New York, Tony Bloom, Paul Barber, the Bloom family came in and they didn't want to leave. They were there talking with fans for hours, and they just seemed like they were just part of the crew, not like they were some big owner of a team who didn't really care. They were really passionate about our story, our fandom, why we were fans, how they could interact with us and engage with us here in the States. And yeah, it was a really eye-opening experience to see that connection with the club here on our soil.
Yeah, I mean that's just the thing. I mean, obviously, I mean, you guys probably don't get to see it from that side, but I mean, there can't be too many chairmen that travel up and down the country on the train with the supporters. You know, it's like, which is what Tony does religiously, and it's like, you know, you quite often see him for a pint after the game. He's he's still very much one of us.
He'll pilfer your crisps. But this is actually the point I was going to make towards Tyler, because obviously he's if he's down in Atlanta, he's. You know, again, I've sat on committees. I'm not part of it now, but the Football Association used to have, or still do have, their Premier League fans representative meetings with a representative of each club's fans, and they were talking about at the time certain clubs not engaging with their supporters, and we're talking the attitude of the 80s and the 90s, and Kieran, this is probably something that'll ring true with you, of clubs being sort of very arrogant and very taken for granted the fandom and the supporters base of their football club. And you know, obviously nowadays fans expect their clubs to engage in them, and they do. So sometimes they'll give you know, a nodding to it, it's they're on sort of buddy terms, but that's about it. And then you've got Brighton. And I remember saying some comment in this round table, and the bloke from the Premier League just rounded on me. I said, well, I don't know what you've got to moan about. Your club embarrasses everyone else when it comes to PR and talking with the fans. And we come back to, if you remember, AD, when we had Henry Winter on,
yeah,
how other Premier League clubs got annoyed with the Albion because they kept the conversation, the PR going when lockdown started.
Absolutely.
Other clubs effectively closed down. So, like, Tyler, is this the kind of thing that you experienced when you met up with the board when the Albion were over there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I have a coworker of mine that's a Chelsea fan, and if you need to bleep that later, that's fine too.
You're in swear mode, aren't you?
I know. Is this a family show? I forgot.
Yes,
it was.
Yeah. So I mean, just the experience of walking into the room and knowing that, you know, the chairman's coming, Glenn Murray came, you know, like just the feeling of just they were excited to be there, and it felt like they were as excited to be there as we were that they were here. And it was unlike that with any other club that I experienced, because I think, you know, the other clubs are larger, they maybe already have an established kind of something, I don't know, but it really just, yeah, it was that feeling of like they cared. Yeah. They cared that we showed up, you know, and that was just kind of mind-blowing, because again, from over here in the States, like I look up at Brighton like, man, that's amazing. I mean, I came over last year and did a stadium tour, you know, and just enjoyed walking around the grounds, and it's kind of magical to me, and I'm really excited to be a part of it. And it felt like it was a reciprocal behavior for them. Like they just were glad to be there.
Okay. Well, let's just rewind a little bit then, because I mean, Paul, I just want to get into the nuts and bolts of this really, because obviously when we spoke to you previously, Stateside Seagulls was doing well. It was starting to gather some momentum. So how far have things progressed from that point?
Yeah, it's been astronomical, especially getting into the Europa League this past season, having the stateside tour. I mean, it's grown. We're closing in on 1,000 members signed up with the group right now. And then obviously on Twitter and social media, we have, you know, thousands of followers from across the US and the UK and around the globe. So it's been just a really crazy journey to be able to see the growth of the club, the growth of Stateside Seagulls, and then here in the States for the summer series tour, seeing the fans in person in Philadelphia. We had a section closed off for our event before the game, just outside the stadium. And I would look down, so we were up in kind of a overlook area that we had booked out, and I would look down and there were, I don't know, a couple dozen people who couldn't get in because we just were at capacity already. And, you know, thinking about a year ago, 2 years ago, we would have maybe 20 fans at an event in the US. And now to see, you know, a couple of hundred people showed up and we can't fit everybody in to an event in Philadelphia. It was just, it's mind blowing.
I mean, it really has snowballed, hasn't it? I mean, it was, I mean, obviously the stage like tour would have obviously massively helped. But I mean, how important was you to get the official club seal?
Oh, it was huge. And we've been working on that since right before COVID happened, actually. Excuse me. And that, I feel like that kind of impacted things a little bit just in terms of getting that official club status. And then, you know, just being able to have people go over to the UK and vice versa, that kind of relationship dwindled a little bit, but the fan interaction here in the States and the desire to have that connection with the Albion didn't go away. And I think that having the summer series tour and being able to have that connect with the Albion going forward in person has really been helpful in terms of getting that official status across the line, but then also being able to show that we're not just, you know, fans who wake up in the morning, watch a game, and then tune out. It's something that we really are passionate about, and we want to continue to grow the Albion brand here and show people here that, you know, Brighton is an amazing team, an amazing town, and to take a tour and see it for yourself if you have the opportunity. Mm-hmm.
It becomes a lifestyle, doesn't it? Al. Yeah.
So in your role then, actually, could you just confirm what your role is? And therefore, with what you're doing, you know, you're part of an official group, you've got an official status within that group. How do you actually kind of function?
Yeah, so I guess I'm president of Stateside Seagulls, and we have a board here, and just joined the board, actually. We have an expanded board now.
There's eight of you, isn't
it? To kind of oversee. Yeah, it's about 10 of us, a dozen of us now. So we're really trying to figure out the next steps in terms of, you know, using that momentum from summer series, the hundreds of fans who have joined us since then and joined us because of the Europa League and everything that's gone on positively with the Albion since then, figuring out what the next step is, because, you know, obviously it's one thing to connect people over here, see that we can do a summer series type of an event, but I think that what really was impactful for me this summer was seeing how much the in-person and the interaction between the Albion and us helped build that relationship. So using that to, you know, basically seeing how we can benefit the Albion in terms of building the fan base over here, but how can the Albion help us in turn do that as well here. So being able to use that relationship in a positive way to be able to build the brand, then also help us build our network here in the States.
Kieran, in addition to what Paul's saying there, and again, someone who gets the culture of, you know, both the UK, which has obviously got a long football tradition, and the US less so. Now, obviously, there's a lot of Albion fans in Japan, basically for Kaoru Mitoma. Now, we don't have any Americans on our playing staff. So I was just wondering if you had any thoughts about how come it is that there's so much more traction for the Albion in the States compared to, say, maybe, you know, many other countries.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to the style of play. What I've noticed is that people are following the team based on just how good they are. It's just come down to that. It's come down to the fact
that
they were winning last season, so playing so many amazing games, beating, you know, the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea and Man United. And, you know, I went into a pub recently in Jersey City And he said, no, I always have the Brighton games on. Yeah, you can always come and watch them in here, mate, he said. And, you know, he said he supported them for about the last 2 years. He says he just loves the games that they play, the way they play, even under Potter. You know, he knew about Potter, which was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And he knows about De Zerbi. So it's taken off in the style, you know. And that started, to be honest, at the beginning of this season when they won 5 out of 6. Now, perhaps I haven't seen as many bars and restaurants with shirts on, but I haven't been out as much either. So we'll see.
Believe me, our listening numbers suffer when we lose, so don't worry about it.
It must when you walk into it and you have that conversation and you see someone singing from the same hymn sheet as you are, it must really like take your breath away. It's like, whoa, hang on a minute. This didn't happen at the Goldston.
No, it was incredible. You know, he had the Man U Brighton game on. Remember, just what was that, 3 or 4? Well,
it was about 1-0 penalty. Yeah. 99th minute penalty with a flake.
Hang on, are you talking about last season or this season?
This season, sorry.
Yeah, the three-one win up there.
Yeah. So he had that on, and it was on the main NBC channel, I think. And it was just extraordinary because, you know, other people in the bar were also looking at it, thinking, "Hang on a minute, this is Man United, aren't they supposed to be winning?" And people just could just tell that this was a style of play that hadn't been seen. You know, no one had really heard of Brighton, and now they have. And it's interesting to go back to what you said about Mitoma. The number of shirts that I saw in Philadelphia and Atlanta with people, Mitoma was probably the number one.
Really?
Back. Yeah.
Mitomania is a real thing. I mean, we see it here. It's incredible, and long may it continue, because, you know, you see the amount of, like, Japanese coming to the ground. Well,
this is
it.
I mean, for you guys who don't come over, you got to see it. It's got to be seen to be believed. We're talking hundreds of Japanese fans. They'll swarm the club shop. I was told it was a bit of an urban myth that actually all the twos had run out in terms of the stickers, and we'd run out of M's as well. And I also wonder if it's a bit of an urban myth that the European shirt, which incidentally I can see hanging up behind you, Tyler, they launched it at a given hour just in case the Japanese went loopy and ordered everything before we did.
You never know. At some point, you might even wear it.
Yeah, I'd like to think that it's an... I don't know if it's an urban myth, but if it isn't, it deserves to be true anyway.
Okay, well, Paul, okay, so you've got... there's various affiliated groups within the Stateside Seagulls, aren't there? So you've got the Atlanta Seagulls, you've got the Philly, the Chicago. I mean, how many groups have you got, and how can you grow it to, like... I mean, obviously, you want all 51, don't you?
Yeah, no, that'd definitely be the goal. Yeah, it's crazy. It's, you know, so we had New York, Chicago, Philadelphia before summer series even started. And now Tyler and obviously all the guys in Atlanta started Atlanta Seagulls. I can't even count them now. It's just so many fans are across the country. And that's kind of a blessing and a curse, because it is easy for Atlanta or DC or Philadelphia people to get together. But then there are also people in the pockets where don't have 20, 30 fans who can get together. So fans in Arkansas, fans in Oklahoma, fans in more rural areas. So that's kind of why it's really helpful to have that social media and kind of that digital landscape as well, to be able to connect those people who can watch the games, who do feel a connection to the club, but don't necessarily have that avenue to be able to go in person and watch it, you know, a game with everybody else. So that's really something that we want to be able to connect. Yeah. Everybody here in the States with that club.
When you say fans in Oklahoma, you mean John Bradshaw, don't you?
Yeah.
I do. Which I never thought that we'd have a fan in Tulsa, but here he is, and he's the biggest fan.
Yeah. When it comes to growing the club membership, the membership, is it something that's basically organic, or do you go knocking on doors like Jehovah's Witnesses?
It really generally is organic. I know that when I would go to, I'm pretty close to DC, so I go down there sometimes and watch games with the DC Seagulls, obviously this summer with Philadelphia, Atlanta, New York. You know, you would meet people on Twitter, you'd see people commenting, and you'd try to, on the Brighton Twitter account, you know, where are you watching? Oh, I'm in South Carolina or whatever. You try to get them on board, but then you see people in Atlanta or in Philadelphia that you'd never even heard of. You've never met them. They didn't know about Stateside Seagulls. And it's like, okay, you're a Brighton fan. That's cool. You can join Stateside Seagulls, but they're already a Brighton fan because they've watched the games, because they've gotten into the story independently of us at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So obviously bring them on board, but you know, Brighton fans are just kind of popping up everywhere now. And it's unbelievable to see.
I mean, I did notice there was a bit of a guerrilla campaign with the Stateside Seagull merch and trying to get it around as many players as possible.
Absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, exactly.
Tyler, I mean, tell us, you're down there in Atlanta where the Albion played during the summer. Can you give us a flavour as to the fan base before we played there and afterwards? Was there a kind of a growth? I mean, did you notice anyone from, who did we play down there? Was it Newcastle?
Brentford, I think.
It was Brentford. Oh, I was about to say,
the one we won.
Yeah, I was about to say, did anyone jump ship from Brentford? That's not really asking much, is it? Did you notice a sort of an uptake in the fan base?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I did. It's interesting. Before that match, I was used to just kind of sitting on my couch, drinking coffee, watching the match by myself, or with my dad. I got my dad into supporting Brighton as well. But the two of us would watch it together. And then we kind of met. There's a gentleman named Johnny and a gentleman named Nathan. And we kind of all connected online right before the summer series. And we're like, hey, we should start a local kind of chapter of the Brighton supporters. And then I'm totally not opposed to the Jehovah's Witness approach, by the way. I'm happy, Paul, if you need me to go door to door, I'll spread the good
word. He's got the
merch. Yeah.
Hello. But yeah, so, I was wondering if we'd like to talk about Mitoma.
Mitoma. But then going to the match and just seeing, first off, I was pretty pissed because the entire Brighton section sold out before I could buy tickets.
Really?
So I ended up in the Newcastle section. So if you ever rewatch the game and you hear someone who has probably had too many beers chanting at Jason from the Newcastle section, that was me in the stands. But yeah, I got told to sit down a few times. That was pretty fun. But the amount of people there supporting Brighton was just kind of mind blowing because, again, I have been sitting on my couch and watching this match. And so, This season, we actually found a bar in Midtown called Cypress Street that is the manager super nice, is like, hey, I'll put every match on. Even like when the matches start at 9, the restaurant doesn't open till 10. He'll like let us sit out on the patio, watch the match, serve us beer until they open. I mean, he's been really supportive. And so we've been able to have pretty good turnouts, you know, 8 to 10 people every week just showing up, watching Brighton together. And again, coming from nothing, that's amazing.
Has he allowed you to deck the bar out in Albion flags?
So I actually bought an away kit of this year's away kit and put Cypress Street in the number 23, and he's framing it and putting it on the wall.
Brilliant.
So
yeah, cool.
Yeah. Anybody coming to Atlanta, come on down.
The other thing about all these games over there was they're all double headers as well, weren't they? So I mean, obviously I know particularly the one in Atlanta. One of my best friends lives in Atlanta, and he took his son for the first time, and he was absolutely stoked. But another one of our friends from Brighton, he went with him. Unfortunately, he supported one of those other teams that were playing.
Yeah,
you know, that one we don't like very much, that tried to buy the club. Yeah. But I mean, obviously you had lots of supporters from all over the place, like representing their team. So, I mean, I know that Chelsea have got quite a big following in the States, Newcastle, probably not so much.
Yeah. It's, you know, so you have the Atlanta United factor there with Newcastle, because Almiron was one of our star players for the first couple of years here. So a lot of people kind of followed him over to the Premier League when they were, you know, when he moved over. But yeah, you're right. There was definitely a lot of fans for the other clubs there. And it's such a big stadium. I mean, it's 73,000, you know, it's like when we were the early match, and it was pretty, you know, it was definitely mostly Brighton and Brentford fans for that first match. And that was great. I mean, there were obviously areas that were sparse, but on our end, we even had like a meetup at halftime where we all got together and get a picture. And I don't know, Paul, you were there too. I know, we probably had 50, 60 people there, you know, in the picture. And It was great. I mean, it was a really cool experience.
Yeah. So Paul, so obviously you see the likes of the support that the likes of Chelsea have, the likes that the support that Man United and Liverpool will have, obviously, over there in the States. So how we don't expect like the States, our Seagulls, to get as big and have that amount of support. But how do you grow it? How do you continue to evolve it and get more and more people involved?
The word of mouth is obviously huge. So being able to have people that are Brighton fans that connect to other Brighton fans or other people who might be interested. So like Tyler with his dad, connecting that way, seeing the Albion play here, that was very helpful. And having the games be on TV and having the team do so well, I mean, that's obviously going to do nothing but help. But then also the connection that we have with the club now, having official supporters status, working with them on planning events, of course, of summer series, and really working with them to build up the supporters club network, whether it's here in the States or globally in Japan, South Korea, elsewhere, having that connection with the club and being able to, you know, work with them on ideas that we have and ideas that they might have to build the brand and build Stateside Seagulls and the Albion to be the best that we can and to build the supporters club. You know, that's really helpful. And it's been, you know, amazing to be able to with them in a collaborative way instead of just kind of doing our own thing for a while.
You know, you're talking about, you know, the Jehovah's Witness way of knocking on doors and saying that, you know, have you heard of the word of De Zerbe yet? Is that, I think that there's, I think she might even be a board member, Laura Ellen Ashcraft, who was on the previous American show that we did a couple of years ago. Now, there's this thing that is very culturally something we don't do here, is that a lot of Americans have a flag bucket with the, you know, the stars and stripes hanging outside their house. She doesn't. She has an Albion flag hanging outside her house. Now, whether she's actually suffered any grief for it on the back of that, I don't know. But yeah, instead of the stars and stripes, she has a blue flag with a white circle on it and a seagull that looks like it's about to poop on you flying through there. So I think that's about as good a positive consideration you can give to the Albion as you could ever get, that you're prepared to replace your own stars and stripes with an Albion flag. I'll salute that.
Okay.
We actually do have flags back here too, so we're ready, we're prepared.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As ever, we are brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. Over 130,000 shirts of every colour and shade, and some of which you can't even tell what colour or shade they actually are. Paul, why don't you have a go at describing this one for me?
Let's see. So it looks like it's red and white striped. Lots of stripes, too. It's not just like one down the middle. Black shoulders, kind of black piping. Looks like maybe the sponsor is white across the front, writing with a circle logo. It looks like maybe some type of Scandinavian company or something. The badge is giving me Malmo vibes. Is it Malmo, potentially?
He's only gone and nailed it.
That's really not
he's
fair.
Gone, he's now, would you like is to put real? A year on it?
Do we get it?
No.
I'm stunned over here.
Say,
not as stunned as I am, trust me.
Whatever it is, it's not a first team shirt. But I would guess something like that. I mean, we're talking the stripes are so narrow, it looks like pajama tops. So I'm going
like it,
to. I'm not a fan. I'm going to say 95.
I was going to go late 90s.
No, it is later than that.
20. This is a guess. I have no idea.
This is your shirt of the week. And on a jaunty angle, says Phil, this is the 2012 to 2013. Away shirt of Swedish Allsvenskan side Malmö Fotbollförening, commonly known as Malmö FF. And the home is the 22,500 capacity Aleda Stadion, which was purpose built for Malmö in 2009. The team was formed in 1910. And in those early years, with an absence of the National League system, they played in and around the city of Malmö against sides from Denmark, which is a short hop over for the Öresund Sea. In 1920, the Swedish FA invited Swedish clubs to compete in a national league system. And Malmo began in Division 2, promptly won the league and gained promotion to the top flight in 1921. Malmo have an impressive honours list. They've been Swedish champions 23 times and are the current champions. And they also have 17 Swedish Cup wins to their name as well. A respectable European record of 197 games includes a runners-up to Nottingham Forest in the European Cup in 1979. Links to the UK include current centre-back Pontus Janssen. He had three seasons with Leeds and then was with Brentford from 2019 to the end of last season. Former Arsenal and Sunderland midfielder Stefan Schwarz began his career with Malmo in 87. And of course, Zlatan Ibrahimovic was there as well. Well, wasn't he? Where wasn't he, actually, he says. He started his career at Malmo in 99 and spent 2016 to 2018 at Man United as part of a career spanning 637 games, scoring 405 goals. Couple of links to the Albion then. They include Peter Guargis, who sounds like a death metal band, doesn't he, really? It's like it's like you can just see Andy Bass wearing one of his Led T-shirts. He was a midfielder who joined us in 2018 and played a couple of games for us before moving to Malmo in 2021. And bang up to date, under 21 defender Kasper Nilsson spent his youth career with Malmo before moving to the Albion in 2020. So thank you for that, Phil. And of course, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com. Alan.
So moving on with the whole sort of history of it, I'm sorry, Kieran. It looks like I'm kind of bypassing you here because I know that you know the story. You were there. You seen it. You got the T-shirt. But I'm going to say with Tyler and certainly with Paul, I think we've asked him, but I'm going to ask again. Did you actually sort of go on a deep dive into the history of the Albion? And I mean, because you can see what's going on now. It's well run, and you know we've all the plaudits we're getting now. But if you then rewind to the back end of the 90s and the Albion were in deep doo-doos, have you done the deep dive into the history of that then, Tyler?
I have, probably not as deep as I could, but I'm aware of the story and really, you know, so being an Atlanta fan, I'll say I know there was, that's the book I need to get, huh?
Build a bonfire. Done. I'm not going to sing the rest of it because we'll get the radio station closed down.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just there's a couple stories of kind of that. So Atlanta is a very transient. I'm gonna come back to Brighton, but
no,
Atlanta's
a
very a very transient city. So there's a lot of times we go to a professional sporting event in Atlanta, and half the stadium is the other fans, which is unfortunate. Being born and raised, grown up Atlanta, always been Atlanta fan. And so the first time I started experiencing anything that was very passionately for the community and people, everyone in the stadium was for that team, was fantastic. It's an energy that you never experience. And so fast forwarding to Brighton, kind of realizing that there's just so much that the community has done, that the city of Brighton, that banding together and really keeping the club alive is like really fascinating. And there's, I'm really drawn to that. Just the fact that like it's Brighton's team, you know, like it is Brighton, you know, and obviously, you know, there's Tony Bloom now and Paul Barber, but it really feels like, you guys as, you know, long suffering Brighton fans have really, pulled the team from the depths of despair to where it is now. And I'm just really honored and grateful to be a part of it here.
Yeah. You're part of the next chapter, aren't you?
Yeah.
But Kieran, I mean, obviously he's like, Tyler's talking about the excellent work that Tony Bloom and Paul Barber have done, but we can't forget the work that Dick Knight has done, right?
That's what I was just going to say. Dick Knight, surely, and his attempts to get the planning permission. How long did that take? How long did it take for a government to actually finally wake
years.
Up and go? How long?
12 years.
Yeah. So 12 years of this ongoing campaign, which I never saw anything like it. You know, I was witnessing it from abroad as well, mostly thinking to myself, why on earth is it going to take this long for a town which is so brilliant? Got, you know, London by the sea, basically. Got the best nightlife, the best bars and restaurants. Cosmopolitan, whatever you want to call it. It's just got a great vibe, and it didn't have a football club. It didn't have a ground for a football club of such pedigree. And it took huge effort just from that administrative bureaucracy point of view, and the people marching and going to sort of basically hound politicians and handing over, you know, massive amounts of signatures. It was incredible. That still brings sort of goosebumps.
Did your editors at the various news outlets that you've worked at in that time, did they allow you a kind of a self-promoting, for want of a better term, self-promoting story? Because like I say, when you're at the bottom of the fourth or third division, it barely registers anywhere other than maybe outside Brighton or those who are interested in football. I mean, we're now a global story, but were you allowed to tell the story on these outlets?
You know, unfortunately, I've been in too many different kind of international hotspots that the realities of Brighton and Hove Albion didn't quite register enough, if you know what I mean, for the audience that I was working with at the time. But I do remember that the signatures and Dick Knight did get at least some traction when I was at CNN. It was in the later days when I was there, but it was something that was clear that, you know, people couldn't quite realize that it had taken this amount of time and effort to get something that was seemed so simple through the system.
But okay, but I mean, there was a lot of people that helped to support us to get us to that point. I mean, you just mentioned a lot of them there, you know, like the Paul Samra and the Tiller.
Fatboy Slim.
Fatboy
Slim. Norman, yeah, as well. I mean, you know, it was a collective effort to get us to where we are now. And,
the thing is, AD, I also think, and it was kind of a bit of a red letter day for the football club when we played Ajax that time back in September. It just made me stop and pause and think about the journey and those that we've lost on the way. I mean, in those 27 years, and like I say, it's a long time, certainly in football, but it's those people that never made it as part of that journey. And I'm sure that we've all got people. You've got people, AD, I've got, I'm sure Kieran has got people who were on his journey or on your own particular journey with the Albion who haven't made it that far. And I don't know, I don't know about you, Kieran, but you know, you sort of stop and think and reflect and you think, wouldn't it be great if so-and-so saw this? I mean, have you got someone in your life like that?
Well, you know, it's funny. My dad is 91 and he kind of lives in New Orleans. So he can start up the New Orleans chapter pool once we get him we get him off his meds.
Brackets juniors.
He can go down. He's got a scooter. So I think he could put the flag at the back of his scooter. I'm going to get him some merch now for Christmas. Now I know what I'm going to get him.
Absolutely. But those that have been on the journey with you, Kieran.
Yeah, he used to take me, or I used to end up taking him as well. He took me to the Goldstone and I would help him in the Amex. He can't go anymore. He doesn't get over to the UK that much. But he so enjoys watching every single game because he can on the sports deal over here. You know, Brighton is broadcast every weekend and we get to see every single game and we'll watch it sometimes together on FaceTime or whatever. And it's just, you know, that journey you talk about of trying to see the European games, he would have loved to have seen those.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he just dreamt of the Premier League. And then when we got there, we were able to visit, you know, several times, my kids.
Does he recognize it as the same club he went to when he went to the Goldstone?
You know, I think he does. I think he sees that there are so many salt of the earth Brighton fans, you know, people who are just genuinely Brightonians, and they've always just grown up dreaming about having a team. And guess what? The team now just does really well. It's got to a situation where, you know, you're playing the type of football that's got flair and panache and genuine interest for a wider audience. So I think, yeah, he loves the Brighton spirit, though. He loves it indeed.
It's incredible, Al. I mean,
there was one question. Do you know what? There's a question we should have asked Kieran right at the top of the show. What was your first game?
Oh, my gosh, my first game. Yeah, I want to say it was Notts County.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking more when rather than who, but carry on.
Okay, sorry, yeah. My first game was in definitely just as I was 8, 9, so we're talking 47 years ago. Yeah, so just in those. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And the thing that always scared me about the Goldstone was the urinals. They were the most unbelievable things that, you know, at a young boy's age, when you're just pushed into this place to go for half time, what is going on?
I'm not having that, Kieran. The thing that should have scared you most about the Goldstone was not the urinals, the fact that the burger stool backed onto the same wall that you're weeing against.
And you couldn't tell sometimes which was which. Which stand did you normally go to, Kieran?
The south.
Oh, right. Okay. I mean, I've got to put this. Tyler and Paul, you might be horrified with this. You have to bear in mind that bit by bit by bit, I mean, it's all concrete terracing. The ground itself opened in 1902. The stands were archaic. Everything was concrete. And basically, the toilet was you weed up against a concrete wall that happened to be painted blue and had a gutter at the bottom of it. That was as, and if you wanted a further toilet, then no. I mean, Alexander Fleming would have been in his element in those places. I mean, this is the thing.
That's a good reference for you kids.
The discoverer of penicillin. Okay, right. I mean, I'm kind of trying to paint this picture, Tyler and Paul, of just how decrepit, certainly in the last days, the Goldstone ground was. And yet, Kieran, it was ours. We had to love it, didn't we?
Yeah, it was magnificent. You know, just the idea of standing as well. You know, again, as a kid, you couldn't see much. So, you know, you'd have to get to the front, and, you know, it was incredible. You just had these opportunities to see players as well that just a little bit like today went on to bigger things. I think we also inherited some old Liverpool players back in the day, like we have done recently with Lallana Yeah. So it basically we had Jimmy Case and we had Mickey Robinson go there like Evan Ferguson might. Who knows?
So we had Mark Lawrenson in those days, Brian Lawrence, who took no prisoners. And actually I think it was something I posted on Twitter. It was a game where Brighton played Man City, beat them 4-1. That was in the days when Man City were dreadful. They actually finished below us in our first ever season in the first division. We beat them 4-1. Jerry Ryan, the late great Jerry Ryan, ran about 60 yards. No Man City player
got on a sandpit.
Through a sandpit. Yeah, it's something that was posted on Twitter today. It was absolutely wonderful. I mean, it's standing on the orange box, Kieran, isn't it? It's going with your uncles or your father, and it's the smell of the smoke and the onions and the foul language, which you thought only kids at school swore, didn't you? You thought parents had got out of it by then. Those are the sights of the sounds of the Goldstone, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And to be honest, the Amex is such a beautiful stadium. But it's managed to somehow keep some characteristics. I'm not sure how to explain it, but it's got this kind of curve to it. Obviously, the look of it is beautiful, but when you're inside, it's very intimate, and I feel like you're a lot closer to people, and you're a lot more in a space that just gives you this incredible happiness. I don't know why I think that at the top of the Downs. I just always think of myself thinking this is my happy place.
You know what it is, don't you, Kieran? It's a roof. Yeah. I mean, a roof's a luxury for us. I'm still getting used to it.
I'm harking back to what you were saying about a nostalgia for a smell. I mean, I can smell the Goldstone now. Not all of it was good. Trust me.
Well, the thing is, that's the thing for me. The Goldstone, the overriding smell for the Goldstone was horrible burgers and cigarette smoke. With Vines. Dean, it was chips and curry sauce. And then the Amex, and it still is, it's the pies. It's the smell of the pies. It's and I take Kieran's point completely. I hadn't thought of it in those terms, Kieran, and thank you for sort of put it in those terms that, yeah, there is a kind of a womb-like feel. Yes, it's spacious, but you're all together. There's this kind of oneness, well, this usual oneness. So, Tyler, Paul, does that mean that you're going to get over a bit sharpish with those romantic descriptions?
Silence. I'm coming over in December to see a match in a few.
Oh, really? Wow, cool.
I'm going
Which
to
one?
The Burnley match.
No, wait, I'm coming over for that one and Marseille.
Oh,
fantastic.
That's awesome. Yeah, my mom has actually never been to the UK, so I'm taking her for about 10 days, and we're actually starting in Scotland, but I purposely planned our trip so that we'd end up in Brighton for that match. So,
okay. Well, that gives us a nice segue into the present day then, chaps. And obviously, we were back in action this weekend and just had the international break. Hopefully a chance to get some of our walking wounded back and maybe a few more added to that list. I mean, the injury list at the moment, Paul, is getting insane, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't even remember who's hurt and who's not. It's I mean, that, but that's kind of, I guess, what we expected having so many competitions. It's not good, but it's just kind of the nature of the beast, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, the Premier League actually released this report this week about how there's never been so many injuries, and most of them are soft tissue injuries, which
I don't know if that's a coincidence or not. All I'd say is, Tyler, when you come over, mate, bring your boots. I don't know if that's a coincidence or not, if it's the nature of training or if it's, I mean, if you consider the way that we play, is there something about that? I mean, when the Amex opened, I don't know if you remember, there was an awful lot of knee injuries, and I think they looked at blaming the turf. Now, if that's the same across all 20 pitches, then that's a weird coincidence. What is it? Don't know. Is it the way that they're being asked to play? I think you'd need to have a bit more sort of in-depth analysis on the data there. I mean, just to say that there's more soft tissue damage, you know, or it's either that, or maybe they are genuinely made out of paper.
Well, I think a lot of it is to do with the equipment, for want of a better phrase, with the way that the boots are configured these days. It's like, and you're seeing it in particularly in the women's game, and this is a crime, by the way, that in 2023 going to 24, one of the major boot manufacturers has not actually got together and said, oh, actually, women have a different physiology to men. Let's make a boot specifically for them, which is they still haven't done yet. But it's
actually,
like,
what you're doing here, AD, is raising a point that Kieran made right at the top of the show here. Now, he was saying about, we're talking about the now and the future, is the idea of the women's, a bespoke women's stadium. Europe's first, because as I understand it, maybe one of you guys can put some more meat on the bone here. I understand that there's a bespoke women's stadium in Kansas. Is that the case?
Yeah, Kansas City is building the first women's soccer stadium here in the US, but then Brighton hopefully will be the second in the world.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's just a small matter of finding somewhere, because as we pointed out earlier, it took 12 years to get where we are now. And Brighton, as they say, certainly in terms of a major development, is full up. I mean, I suspect that there's a space, and where there's a will, there's a way. It's going to happen, but it's an amazing thing. Kieran, I mean, it's just kind of indicative of the nature of a progressive attitude of the club, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you'll find that if we can support, what was it, the last game that the women played was sold out at Crawley.
Yep,
that's right, yeah.
So, you know, this is just amazing that we're getting to see and experience, you know, this kind of side of the game, which in America has been here, well, I don't know, much more prevalent. It's been, you know, something my daughters used to watch when they were growing up, and always support the US team, the women's team. And it's been such a great joy to see them do so well over the years, except of course this last World Cup. But
yeah,
before then, they were
too well, did it?
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, we got to see the women's Euros here at the Amex, and you know, it was a record 8-0 score against Norway. There was a brilliant quarterfinal against the team who the following year won the World Cup. I mean, it really did kick off a zeitgeist, certainly in women's football. I think that, I've said this before, we felt so invested in that particular European tournament because there was two major games, both England games, at the Amex. I think it was a third one as well.
Yeah, it was a third one.
And even that attracted 15,000 people. So, yeah, for me, a women's bespoke stadium can't come quick enough. Yes. I mean, I don't know if any of you three, I mean, Kieran's just mentioned it himself, but obviously women's soccer is bigger in the States than it is here. But are there sort of advice or sort of pitfalls or pluses or minuses that the Albion could be looking out for, any of you?
Yeah, no, I think that it's definitely growing, especially across the globe. Obviously, it's been huge here in the States, and with the NWSL, the coverage is just grown exponentially. There's a team in Washington. There's teams all across, and they kind of correlate with the MLS teams, but not necessarily. And they have huge crowds in Washington. They play at the same stadium that DC United plays at. So it's kind of the same type of situation as Brighton at the Amex when they do get to play there. So it's definitely, it's a huge avenue through which to grow the sport. And, you know, I think that Brighton going down that road is definitely a step in the right direction. And it has to be said that the coach of Brighton is from California. So it's another avenue for the Stateside Seagulls to worm our way in there.
So we're running very, very short of time now. And it's been brilliant talking to these guys from America. So just to finish off, it's a question we ask of a lot of people, but I'm going to put the same question to each of you. Let's start with you, Kieran. What does Brighton and Hove Albion mean to you?
I think it means a sense of belonging. It's always given me an unbelievable journey and experience, and there's been a lot of ups and downs. So for me, just knowing the downs, I can appreciate now these moments so much more when we're seeing Europa League football, and just in general, just the buzz around it. And there's going to be a fan zone at the stadium. There's going to be, you know, all of this great players that have come and gone and still coming up the ranks. And this is what makes it so interesting for me.
Tyler, same to you, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for me, it's community and it's fun. I mean, I know that losses aren't fun, and there are certainly some matches that I've watched that I want to pull my hair out in. But
that's what happened to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that makes sense. You've been watching for a while, eh? but you know, just thinking, it's enjoyable to watch the beautiful game be played the way Brighton does it. In multiple different managers that I've watched, it's still the sense of feeling like there's a community behind it that's producing this on-field product that's just exceptional. I really enjoy it.
Great stuff, Paul.
Yeah, echoing Kieran and Tyler, it's togetherness for me through the ups and the downs, through the Europa League qualifying and seeing the Albion here in the States, or through semifinal losses and terrible results against any number of teams. It's just having that ability to have somebody else to commiserate with or to celebrate the big moments in life. And it's just, you know, it means everything to me. And I'm so grateful to be able to have met so many people through Stateside Seagulls, through the Albion. It's just, it's been everything to me.
Paul, it's taken over your life, isn't it?
It really has. You've seen my office. It's all Brighton stuff everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, before we like kicked off, Paul actually admitted to us he's having his house done up, and I think I've got those blue and white stripes yeah. I can see going on.
Well, maybe.
Well, that is all we've got time for. So thank you to all of our Stateside Seagulls, to Kieran Baker, to Tyler Scott, to Paul Dorsey, of course to Alan Wares. I've been Aidy Packham, and this has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online radioreverb.com, on DAB, of course on our podcast, and in association boldfootballshirts.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Cheers. Bye.
Let us be lovers. We'll marry our fortunes together. I've got some real estate here in my bag. So we bought a pack of cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner pies and walked off to look for America. Kathy, I said, as we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh, Michigan seems like a dream to me now. It took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America. Laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. I said be careful, his bow tie is really a camera. A cigarette, I think there's one in my raincoat. We smoked the last one an hour ago. So I looked at the the scenery. She read her magazine, and the moon rose over an open field. Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for a man.